The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
Tesla plans to cut more than 10% of its global workforce.
On X, the social media site Musk owns, he put it in response to a follower's comment that about every 5 years, Tesla needs to reorganize and streamline itself as it prepares for a new phase of growth.
And investment banking and trading power earnings at Goldman Sachs. Plus, how would keeping interest rates higher for longer impact markets? It's Monday, April 15th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Tesla, the world's most valuable automaker, is laying off more than 10% of its global workforce. And two of the company's top deputies are also leaving the company. This all comes after Tesla suffered its first year-over-year decline in quarterly deliveries since 2020. The company is also struggling with dimming growth prospects as the electric vehicle market has cooled. Joining me now with more is Wall Street Journal Autos reporter Ryan Felton. Welcome, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
So Tesla CEO Elon Musk sent a note to employees today to announce these changes. The email was seen by the Wall Street Journal. What details and reasoning did Musk give?
Elon Musk's main points that he gave were just the company had experienced a lot of rapid growth over the last few years. And so in a sense, they had seen a lot of duplication of roles and job functions, as he put it. But also they're kind of in this space where they're planning to put out newer cars in the coming years, what they call their next generation of vehicles. That next sort of step in the company's trajectory, he wants the company to be sort of right-sized and streamlined so it can be prepared to kind of go head-on into that moment. The company didn't respond to a request or comment, but on X, the social media site Musk owns, he put it in response to a follower's comment that about every 5 years, Tesla needs to reorganize and streamline itself as it prepares for a new phase of growth.
What about this leadership shakeup? Two top deputies leaving. How significant is that?
Yeah, I think it came as a bit of a surprise just because of the moment that the company's at, the crossroads of preparing to launch these next vehicles. In particular, Drew Baglino, he has been with the company since basically the mid-2000s, nearly 20 years. He was one of just four people named to the company's leadership team and was one of a few who would speak on analyst calls. So, he was just kind of seen as like this stabilizing force at the company that has, for a long period of time, had a lot of executive churn. The other kind of key departure was a exec who oversees policy and business development at the company, Rohan Patel. He had been with the company for about 8 years and recently had been kind of more of a forward-looking face of the company on X in particular. He was kind of routinely seen talking about happenings at the company. So two very visible employees stepping aside at already a time where many more are leaving.
You know, Ryan, it strikes me that there's always been a lot of hype around Tesla. What are the risks of that? Are we seeing some of that play out right now?
The hype kind of emanates from them being the company that made EVs cool and in a way doable. I mean, they're making money on EVs when a lot of other companies have struggled to do so. A lot of the hype has just kind of been driven by that. They have the biggest market cap of any automaker. And when a company of that stature cuts 10% of its workforce, I mean, it's going to raise a lot of questions. And so there's risks in being the company that kind of just holds that much meaning. But it is derived from the fact that they have kind of single-handedly almost brought about this big amount of change to the auto industry.
That's Wall Street Journal Autos reporter Ryan Felton. Meanwhile, EVs are facing a growing challenge from hybrids. Industry figures show gas electric hybrid sales in the U.S. rose 43% in the first quarter, while EV sales flattened, up just 2.7%. Weak numbers from Tesla, which accounts for about half of the U.S. electric market, contributed to those sluggish sales, according to data from research firm Motor Intelligence. Goldman Sachs reported sharply higher profit for the first quarter, up 28% from a year ago. The bank was bolstered by strong performance in investment banking and its growing business managing money and investments for wealthy clients. Chief Executive David Solomon and President John Waldron continue to incentivize Goldman employees to direct business across these core units of the bank. Within its global banking and markets division, the bank has boosted revenue by lending more to institutional clients who are served by trading and banking teams. In asset and wealth management, one focus is to increase lending to its very wealthy clients. Goldman's stock rose almost 3%, the best performer in the Dow. And the U.S. Commerce Department says retail sales rose a seasonally adjusted 0.7% in March compared with a month earlier, well ahead of economists' expectations. The monthly report is the latest sign consumers continue to spend, rebuking the assumption that Americans are starting to pinch pennies. With savings buffered by the pandemic running down and the cumulative impact of inflation eating into wage gains, many analysts estimated consumers would be tapped out months ago. Now economists see a brighter outlook for growth. Stock futures immediately advanced following the news, and Treasury yields climbed as bond prices slid to reflect a hotter economic environment. Coming up, interest rate cuts could be further down the line than many investors had hoped. So, what does keeping rates higher for longer mean for the stock market? That's after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
U.S. stocks have soared to record levels, boosted by hopes the Federal Reserve will begin cutting interest rates later this year. But after hotter-than-expected inflation in March, as we've been reporting, the case for rate cuts is somewhat weakening. That has investors worried that further gains may be tough to come by. Joining me now with a closer look at how the prospect of having higher rates for longer is playing out across the market is Wall Street Journal markets reporter Hartika Singh. Welcome back, Hartika.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so one area that was hit hard last week by that inflation report and those swirling questions over the Fed's path were small cap stocks. Why is that?
Small caps have had this really extraordinary rally since the end of October last year. And a lot of it was because there were all these expectations that, hey, we're going to have rate cuts really soon. And that boosted small caps extraordinarily. The reason why small caps tend to get hurt by higher interest rates is because, you know, they issue more floating rate debt than their larger cap peers. So if rates go up, then they have to pay more to service their debt.
Let's turn to big tech, which really powered market advances last year. And AI is still going strong with chipmaker NVIDIA. Can that last in a high rate environment?
It's tough to say because tech stocks have been the market's darlings over the past year. Earlier last year, we saw them really rally because, you know, we had this like banking crisis and people piled into tech stocks as a safety play. And then we had this whole AI mania really just, you know, explode. So depending on, you know, whether this enthusiasm for AI keeps continuing or not, tech stocks could really be in for a potential reckoning because they are such a huge weightage in the S&P 500. The information technology sector alone accounts for nearly 30% of the market value weighted index, which is more than twice the size of any other 10 sectors of the S&P 500. So if people decide to take profits from tech stocks, it would obviously, like, you know, hurt the broader index as well and take it down with it.
Right. Very big part of the market for sure. Let's talk about big banks. Earnings have been rolling in last week and this week as well. And so far, they seem to be doing pretty well. So what could higher interest rates mean for their business going forward?
Higher interest rates impact banks in a few different ways. If you have higher interest rates, you will be more inclined as a depositor to take your money and put it towards a money market fund, put it toward a CD potentially, or put it toward treasuries where you can earn that 5% yield pretty much easily, no risk. You're going to get that, you know, whenever your CD has matured. And that's bad for banks in some ways because banks have to shell out more money to pay to you as a yield-hungry depositor that they didn't have to do before when interest rates were lower. And another way is that if there is a potential recession or if economic conditions are even tight, people could default on their loans and that would lead to banks' loan losses to go up. That's not a problem right now for people, but going forward, there are these worries that that delinquency rate could creep higher. And then the third way in which banks get impacted by higher interest rates is when mortgage rates go really, really high. Since many would-be homebuyers are sitting on the sidelines at the moment, that has led to sharp declines in mortgage activity at the big banks, which is a source of revenue for a lot of these banks. And in turn, we have seen the S&P 500's real estate sector be the worst performer this year and the only sector in the red.
That's Wall Street Journal markets reporter Hardika Singh. You're starting to plan your summer vacation, but a lot of places are putting new restrictions on tourism. What questions do you have about what that means for the future of travel? Send us a note, or even better, record a voice memo on your phone and send it to wnpod@wsj.com. That's wnpod@wsj.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 212-416-4328. Just be sure to include your name and location because we might use it on the show. As we mentioned on this morning's show, jury selection has begun in New York for a criminal case against former President Donald Trump. Manhattan prosecutors charged him last year with 34 counts of falsifying business records to hide a hush money payment to porn star Stormy Daniels ahead of the 2016 election. Jury selection could take a week or more. Arriving this morning at the courthouse, the former president told reporters that the case was nonsense and political persecution. Meanwhile, as Trump sits for the first day of that trial, he's also facing a deadline in a civil fraud case. The former president has to show the financial bona fides of the $175 million bond he obtained to cover the $454 million judgment against him while he appeals the decision. Trump obtained the bond from Knight Specialty Insurance, a little-known insurer that isn't on a list of federally approved sureties. The New York Attorney General's office has demanded proof of the surety's qualifications, including detailing how it is financially solvent and specifying what Trump assets are backed by the bond. And Singapore's Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong announced he will step down next month after nearly two decades in office. The People's Action Party, founded by Lee's father, has ruled uninterrupted since Singapore's independence in 1965. Lee's deputy, Lawrence Wong, will lead the city-state in a transition carefully engineered to preserve Singapore's reputation as a stable spot through times of economic and geopolitical turbulence. With a population of just 5.9 million, the country has taken on an outsized role in Southeast Asia, punching above its weight economically, diplomatically, and militarily, and having strong ties with both the U.S. and China. And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. Today's show was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé with supervising producer Michael Kosmides. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back with a new show tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.